Welcome to Family Guidons, the podcast created by military spouses for military families.
We're the ones holding down the home front during deployments, state activations, and everything in between.
Here we have an honest conversation about the realities of military life, the highs, the hard moments, and the strength it takes to keep moving forward.
Whether you're new to the military community or a seasoned spouse who's seen it all,
Family Guidons is your place for connection, support, and real conversations.
Because no one understands life like the ones who've been living it beside them.
This is Family Guidons. Fall in.
Welcome back to Family Guidons. Today's episode is back together, but not back to normal. We're talking about reintegration. My name is Kathy Bridgers. I'm the parent of two young adults. I've been a military spouse for 29 years and now a military mother of 9 years as my son is deployed.
I'm Michelle Matheny, a military spouse of 14 years and a mother to three young girls and a volunteer with the South Carolina National Guard Family Programs and a huge supporter of our military.
Hi, and I'm Charlotte Stillwell, a military spouse of 31 years, a newish military mom of a young lieutenant currently serving on active duty, and we're here today to talk about reintegration. Reintegration is the process that happens after a deployment when a service member transitions back into civilian life, and it involves a lot, from decompressing to getting medical and psychological screenings, and in some cases reestablishing employment in the case of the National Guard, just to name a few of the things that are going on. But it also involves reconnecting with family, spouses, children, parents, extended family, you know, the whole family, and it can be far-reaching. Today, we're going to talk about how reintegration impacts the whole family, because it's a process, and the process is not always easy.
Yep. So we want to kind of focus on the emotional and mental aspects of that. And to help us with that, we have a special guest here today. So we want to welcome Jennifer Wolf. She is a licensed independent social worker and a certified trauma treatment specialist. And she has been in the mental health field for over 40 years, which is very impressive. Prior to her current role, she was an MFLAC, Military and Family Life Counselor, and she now works in the Behavioral Health Office for the South Carolina National Guard, and she serves our upstate area. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Michelle, everyone, for having me.
Yeah, okay. We're excited to hear your perspective on this, because yes, we felt like this was a really important topic, but not one that we were necessarily fully qualified to talk about beyond our own experience. Yeah. So we want to dive right into, so Charlotte gave us a great definition and background, but what reintegration really looks like or feels like, because I think what we see or what the public sees is a very rosy picture of the reunion, right? Like the surprise videos when the service member comes home and all of the emotional reactions. But the truth is there's a lot that goes on behind that and after kind of that honeymoon phase of the hello. So what do people often misunderstand about coming home from a deployment, service members and public?
Absolutely. Well, I go into something you just said, Charlotte, that it is not easy. And I think the misconception is when there's been physical distance, there can be a disconnect and that it's going to be wonderful and everybody's back together, and then it doesn't feel that way. And roles have changed. Everything is a season in this life, and as we move through seasons, there's new roles, there's a grieving aspect that sometimes people are not aware of when they come back together, and it just doesn't feel the same immediately, and it takes time.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the hardest parts for me to think about, and I remember this from the last time Bill was gone, is that it's okay to feel excited and nervous simultaneously or excited and a little bit stressed about the process. And I know for his unit currently, because they're deployed right now, we have a lot of spouses and parents, family members reaching out to say, hey, I'm kind of worried about how I support, you know, right, this person when they come home, or how they're going to be different. So I think, you know, it's just, it's hard to know what to expect.
Right. Right. And it's, I think it's the, it's being comfortable with the uncertainty of that. And I think in general, that can be difficult for us as human beings. And it's normal to have that, you know, how are my kids going to react? There's that excitement, but then there's like, wait, you're different. I'm different. This is not how we do things. And it's very difficult for the returning service member and for the whole family. So excitement, but oh gosh, this isn't the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as the spouse who has been home, taking care of all the things while Rob was deployed, or the service member was deployed, I feel like a lot of us feel a great pressure to make sure that you keep on doing that so that that homecoming is seamless. And with that comes a lot of stress. Happy stress, like you talked about, mm-hmm. but also unhappy stress. So what is it that the at-home person is likely facing when that service member is coming home?
Right, right. The first thing I would say is sometimes the illusion of perfectionism, that it's got to be perfect, I've got to make it perfect. Perfect doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So it's that pressure that this is a transition, mm-hmm. and this is a flow. There can also be, to be candid, there can be resentment. There can be, hey, I've had to do this. I've run the finances. I've run the family. I think a lot of times with the returning service members, it's difficult. There's not an off switch as well, mm-hmm. from what you did while you were on that deployment versus now you're reintegrating into your family. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was more authoritative. You had an order, you followed it. Being in relationships and love and kids and all of the above and being in a family is much more of a heart issue rather than the head, and that's much more complex. So the pressure on the spouse is she's seen, or he has seen, those changes in the kids. They know the backstory. So they're trying to adjust to them being comfortable, but also for their kids. You know the backstory. Mm-hmm. And how do you communicate that openly without that service member feeling like, well, you know, are you even welcoming me home? Am I even great? Because a lot of that will go with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I can see where it would be hard to, you know, let that service member jump in when you, like you just said, when that service member doesn't have the backstory, you want to jump in and say, but you don't understand, this is what happened. But that's probably not the best time to address those things.
Right.
Does that mean, I don't know.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Charlie. It's I think it's that initial, just let's be present.
Okay.
And kind of figure out what this experience of deployment, multiple deployments, and then what has it been like for everyone? There could have been, during that process, losses, celebrations that service member has missed, that, you know, there's a lot to talk about before you jump right into that routine, because all of those underlying factors are definitely going to affect the emotions of jumping back in the routine. And it just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different.
Yeah. Bill and I have talked a little bit about that already in kind of a joking way, but, you know, just saying, like, I think you're going to have to, you know, maybe sit back and observe a little bit, yes, when you get home to figure out how we've done things, you know, for the last 9 months. And I think,
normal.
Yeah, just, yeah, you know, normalizing the open communication, or helping them try to figure it out and being honest about the emotions that come with that. Like, I think that's the hardest part, right? Like, people don't like to have hard conversations. They want it to just be perfect or good, like you said. But I remember this reality from the last time, and that was even without, you know, kids in the mix, of just being honest about, you know, some of the, like you said, the resentment or the mental load, and like how hard that is to kind of, you know, give it up or transfer some of that back over when you're used to doing it all by yourself for so long.
Yes. Yes. And I love, Michelle, that you say, you know, it's not, resentment doesn't mean wrong. And those hard conversations doesn't mean something's wrong.
Right.
It's, now you can imagine if somebody's been on deployment and they're used to being in charge and giving the orders, and then they come back home and they do that with an angry 15-year-old kid that's gone through whatever they've gone through, or they do it with you. And it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, wait, this is not how we run this show. So it's difficult on both areas.
Yeah.
For them too.
Yep.
You want to say, I'm not your soldier. I don't.
I've said that.
Yeah.
I'm not your soldier.
I wish I would have known ahead of time to discuss it like you guys did, because the first couple of times we didn't. We both have to shift. He has to shift from being in charge and having, you know, perfect structure. But I also had to shift and let go of some of that control that I had at home. And we, I mean, being young and new, we didn't know. We just kind of got together, thought it was going to be perfect. And then I was like, back it on up, sir. And he was like, excuse me. So, you know, you just don't expect that.
Yeah, no.
It's supposed to be sunshine and roses, but it's not always.
I used to think, now I've been in life for a while, that I don't think anything's really sunshine and roses. But even in the midst of the challenges, there's a strengthening and a growth. And that will be the same thing with any transition, that it's not a, you're doing it wrong. It's, wait, we have to really see where each other is now and learn that. And I'm so glad that the purpose of having podcasts like this and being out there so these conversations can happen.
So I think we've made some good points here about the stress between partners or the challenges between partners, but I also hear that a lot of that, if you're in the situation of a full family, probably centers around the kids or the other people in the house. Like, yes, you have to reestablish your communication and your roles as spouses or partners, but also a lot of that stress that the parent at home has handled probably comes from the family situation, or the kids situation. And then also, you know, that reintegration or reestablishing looks a lot different than a spouse relationship when someone's trying to kind of, you know, pick back up with the kids, because they change so much so fast. So looking at kind of how kids experience reintegration, what would you say about that? What advice can you give?
Great question, Michelle. It's first off, some kids are just going to do better than others innately. And the first thing I would say is know your child and know how they deal with transition. You know, with younger children, you may see a lot of clinginess, the separation. If dad or mom was deployed, then you could go away. So you may see. And when I say some kids are going to innately do better than others, there's a lot of research. This was eye-opening for myself as a mother, that says that by the age of five, the innate nature of a child is pretty well established. Like, in other words, if you got a low-maintenance kind of kid that goes with the flow, they're probably going to be that way as an adult. If they're more high maintenance, no matter what you do, and they're more hypersensitive to things, they're probably going to be that way as an adult as well. So, but know the nature of the child. With middle schoolers, latency age, there can be that guilt or that I want to take a stand. If there are differences, like what is the routine? How does this family function? Maybe mom or dad has already established it one way, and then that parent comes back and, well, wait a minute, mom doesn't read my story at that time, and no, I don't eat Frosted Flakes in the morning, and you know, and that's where give grace and say, wait, well, you ate Frosted Flakes when I left, but you don't eat them now because you've grown up. Teenagers, oh my goodness. I've worked with a lot of military families that if that deploy, I think I can see the smile where you're like, okay, I think she know, I know where mm-hmm. she's going with this. That, listen, teenagers are challenging. Yeah, and it's like, I want to be on my own and I want what I want, and or they're more withdrawn. And so they may say, we always said when I covered the Rock Hill area, you know, military fam, I'm good, I'm fine. Everything's good, everything's fine, when they're really not fine. So know that child and then give them outlets of watch for changes in behavior, watch for physical signs of, hey, they're struggling here. And I always think outlets are so powerful because kids will usually, like, I use puppets, I use drawings, I use music, I use, because they're gonna find an outlet. You got to take the shame away. You got to take the, if you say how you're feeling, and that may be from a, again, I'm going to pick on the 15-year-old, you know, I'm not real happy dad's back. You know, I'm not real, he comes in here and he's all that. You're going to get some of that. They're happy. They just don't know how to do this yet. And then they've got all of the difficulties of being that kid in general, mm-hmm. which is a lot.
Yeah.
So family meetings is another thing I wanted to mention. And family, that make, are you getting together as a family to just say, how are things going? And make it fun. Mm-hmm. Everybody picks dinner at a special, like, how are we doing with this? Mm-hmm. You know, generalize it. I'm not sure how to do this either. We're learning as we go. Yeah.
You said the word grace, and I feel like that is just what I need to keep on repeat in my head through this whole process. And to try to, it's a good opportunity, I think, to introduce that to the kids too, you know, like it's not just we're giving, you know, them grace to feel things. They've got to give dad grace to figure out like how to come back into, you know, our lives, and don't give him a hard time because he doesn't know, you know, what you eat for breakfast, mm-hmm. like, or that it's different. But that's a hard thing for kids, but it's a really important mm-hmm. thing to learn. And the earlier they learn it, I mean, right.
Well, and I was going to say, and don't, you know, a part of those family meetings, I one of the things that we tried to establish is if you've asked mom, me, don't turn around yes. and then go ask your dad who has been gone and doesn't know what has led up to my decision. So I think those family meetings are good for yes. situations like that. Say, you know, this is what's happened. We're a team. We're not going to play off of each other. Let's,
absolutely.
Let's work together.
Yes. Yeah. And that's where that's, and when I say make it fun or mm-hmm. do something different, so it's not so formal.
Right.
And most kids, I mean, we all have kids, they play off mom and dad because they want what they want when mm-hmm. they want it. And kids are smart. Mm-hmm. If they see an angle, they're going to take it. So that gives mom and dad, kids, hey, we're not going to play. This is how this is going to roll. And mom and dad set that tone and the kids fall into it. But they have input.
I love the idea of the family meetings. I also, you know, Bill was trying to do this before he left with the girls. But in terms of trying to, like, build that bond before he left with each one of the kids separately. And then kind of thinking about rebuilding that when he comes home. Like, the idea of, like, that one-on-one time. You know, like
yes.
doing special things.
Yes. And going back to the spouse also, you need that one-on-one time separate from the kids. So that can be getting coffee, taking a walk, getting ice cream, whatever that is. And I go back to sometimes because of the innate nature or what's going on with that child, you can do everything, and they're still struggling. Mm-hmm. And that's where to get that additional help. Mm-hmm. You're not in it alone, and maybe that's what they need outside of the family because that's safer for them at that moment.
I've found through this process for us that it has helped me and my oldest to have a more impartial opinion or impartial listening ear to be able to air some of those, you know, concerns mm-hmm. to versus just talking to, you know, to me, you know, her and I together. So, so valuable, the resources that y'all provide in the behavioral health office and beyond, but yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So switching sure. to parents of service members, which, you know, sometimes we forget about the parents of service members. And now that I'm one of those, I realize how important it is. It's an emotional struggle for the parents, too. And trying to figure out how much can you say, how much can you do. Mm-hmm. You're excited, but you want to be respectful of the boundaries, especially if your child has a family. Mine doesn't, so I don't have to worry about that element. But there, that is an extra element that the parent of a deployed has to worry about. Do you have any advice for parents?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think it's inbred in us as a parent to want our child, no matter what age, to be okay. So we may have a tendency to jump right in there. But when they have established a family, being present but not being overbearing is the challenge. So how can I be helpful to this family, because these are my grandkids, or these are, you know, what have you. So can I make a meal and bring it? Can I be part of that family meeting in a way? Let's bring in. So because you're going through your own, like, that's your child that's been deployed, and you're their life giver. So that's some powerful. So you're going through your own angst and emotional turmoil for that. So knowing how to have that boundary, but work with what's going on for me. When I say being overbearing, there can be the tendency when we feel vulnerable or we don't feel it is to jump right in there and say, well, this is how I've been through this before. This is how you do this, or you're not doing this well, you know, instead of wait. How can I be most helpful and walk with you? And then knowing how to keep your feet on the ground when they're doing things that you know are not going to be the best option, but you're letting them learn from the process of that. Not easy. And your own self-care, I can't stress that enough, is you have been through your child. You're going through now your child being gone. And what does that mean? So your own, what do you need to do for you in order to do the best thing for your child's family? Does yeah, that?
It yeah. does. This is my first time having my son deployed in a, you know, not so perfect situation. So I've kind of been trying to navigate that even before he comes home. You know, he's talking excitedly about, hey, my friends want me to do this. We want to go here. We want to go there when we get back. And I'm like, I just want a hug.
Yes.
And then you can go do whatever you want. I just need to put my hands on you for a second. I might even smooch your cheek a little bit. You're just going to have to get over it.
I love it.
He's like, Mom, yeah, I will make sure that. But I don't want to squelch his excitement and the excitement that everybody else has.
Right.
So trying to navigate that, you know, it's been interesting, but I'm sure it will be more challenging when he comes home.
Well, and I also think it's good for you to go ahead and, like, set that expectation to him, like, in a nice and kind of joking, but also I'm serious.
Yeah,
like, exactly, you got to, like, give me a little bit of time here.
Yes.
I think as a spouse, this is helpful to me to help remember, you know, Bill's parents in this equation and making sure that I am trying to help him make space for, you know, because he's a guy and he's not that great at that to begin with, but, you know, making sure that he kind of carves out some time for his mom and dad, you know, outside of our family too, as much as we want to have him just with us, you know, all the time, and hold tight to that.
And it's, I think I did a good job of that, if I do pat myself on the back. When Rob would come home at the midway point, they used to get leave to come home for a few days. We would do the drive-by, let them say, hey, love you, and then we would take off with the family to Walt Disney World or mm-hmm. to the lake for the weekend or just away so that we could all be together and not have the external world poking at us. But I think I knew intuitively, because we didn't discuss mm-hmm. it, but I mm-hmm. knew intuitively he needed to see his mom and dad and brother and sister, you know. So I do think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I love how you phrased it to your son. I need some smooches, yeah. please.
Mm-hmm. Then you can go. I just yeah. need to put my hands on you, know yes. you're real and yes. you're safe, and then you can go do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The only time I've really seen it in working with families when there's is when it's an enmeshment or it's the family that smooches, but not being critical. You know, that sometimes when there's the parent or the extended family and they want to tell, like, this is how you need to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think we've really grown in grace as women with mothers and grandmothers who tended to be very critical. You know, that's not the way you do it. And we've grown in grace to not go there.
Maybe let them know we're available if they need advice, but don't give it until they've asked for it.
Right.
I've just learned that in general with my adult children.
But I think you can also say when you see it intuitively, mm-hmm. it's okay. They may not ask for it. It's okay to say, hey, you know, I want to offer you some advice. This may be helpful. So open
Are
the door.
Are you okay with
Oh, yeah. yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, and I also think when we were preparing for this, you know, kind of along that same line, I saw this, and I try to do this with my own kids also, but the avoid the critical language, but instead mm-hmm. stay curious. So like not you've changed or you're doing this in a way I don't think is good, but you know, I'm curious why you made that decision or, mm-hmm. you know, what feels different now that you're home if you feel like, you know, your service member has opened the door. And I think that's advice for, you know, spouses or parents of just right. when you see those differences, not necessarily pointing them out, you know, specifically, but trying to just keep an open mind and think about the why mm-hmm. behind it.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard in the moment.
Yeah.
So we've touched on some good practices without really saying these are good practices. But, you know, if you could give us three concrete strategies for reintegration that we could use either with our children or with parents or, you know, as spouses, what would you say?
Sure. Well, I think we've mentioned some of the family meetings, give it time. Another thing I wanted to offer is that many times life is different because there may have been missed celebrations. There, you know, Christmases came, birthdays came, maybe there was a significant loss. So how do you, it won't be the same, but how do you honor that? Like maybe have a birthday party any time of the year or celebrate Christmas in July if that's when you're together because you missed that. So make it's the second strategy is anything in life is how you're going to look at it. And you're either going to look at it as this is not what's broken and we can't fix this, or this is challenging, but we can come up with options together. We can walk with each other, not at each other, as we figure this out. So that problem solving, that communication, definitely celebration. And then I wanted to also, when things get intense, and I do this myself, and it served me well in life, is that gratitude. You know, what am I grateful for? Because even if I'm having this moment, we're together to have this moment. I know people might, I'm like, really? But that perspective of waking up in the morning, we have our breath, so we have our life, and what are we grateful for? And starting that, you know, even kids, get them to do a gratitude journal. Write what you're grateful for. Do it yourself. It changes your whole view of everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Start your day on a positive note.
It does.
Yeah. A fresh start every day.
Right. And I would also mention routine. You know, what is our routine? Is it, do we wake up in chaos, or do we wake up with some type of flow? And you have to be careful with news and media and social media and all of that, because there's so many studies that show how that just really kills the frontal lobe of our brain. And so do you want to wake up with that intensity, chaos, or, hey, we're together. How do we create a morning routine for everyone that's pleasurable and we can enjoy?
Yeah, I think along with that routine, which you already mentioned, but like the family meetings or the one-on-one time, you know, making sure you schedule those things in so they happen and not just, you know, wait for them to magically present themselves.
Right. And I also wanted to mention and stress that allow yourself to grieve before you do any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, the concept of grief, we don't think about why we feel sometimes the way we do or we're going through. So you have to acknowledge this, you know, this has been a loss and it's not going to be the same. But moving forward, we have to grieve so we can move forward, because the grief is part of the healing.
Yeah.
So we've acknowledged that it's not all sunshine and roses.
100%.
And it's normal to have some friction and have to work things out. But how do you know when it's gone beyond the point of normal and you need maybe to enlist some help?
Right. Very good question. And thank you, Kathy. It's more of, is it affecting daily functioning? I've said this several times. We can love people through things, but we can't love them out of it. And if it's something that's chemical, or there's been some type of repeated traumatic exposure, it's very significant changes. And you always look at the basics. You know, you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you're not, like, significant changes. And no matter what you're doing, they're just not, you're concerned about them. They will show those signs. And how do you approach that without them feeling like, oh my gosh, you think I'm broken, I need to be fixed?
That was going to be my question. Yeah. How do you do that without, like, you know, totally upsetting the apple cart?
Right. Not easy. I think when we say, hey, we all need help, you know, we're all in the flesh here. We're flawed. This life is hard. So I'm walking with you, because I'm trying to, especially if someone's like, what? Well, let me go. And I need the help. Mm-hmm. You take it off of them. You need the help. It's really them that needs the help, but you're putting it on them so it's not so threatening. Mm-hmm. And I want us to be the best we can be. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. So take away the stigma. Did that answer?
It did.
Okay.
What about some resources if you get to the point where conversation's not doing it and you really need some extra help?
Sure. Well, there are several. There's definitely our behavioral health program, where we are all licensed practitioners that can do assessment, can do short-term counseling. We can connect with resources. There is Military One Source that offers a wide array of services. There's also Give an Hour that offers free counseling for service members and their families. And they have a website. I know in the upstate, we have Upstate Warriors that is, people usually worry about two things when you say, hey, you need to get, is how is this going to affect my military career? And is there going to be a stigma involved? And so to break through that, because it's under HIPAA, it's confidential. And just having those loving, hard conversations that, hey, you know, if I had been through or I'd seen what you have seen or what you've been through, boy, we take all of that into our body. We're all impacted by that. So generalize it.
So I feel like we've kind of, you know, talked around this a lot, but, you know, is there anything else you would say about what a strong reintegration process looks like?
Right.
Like to the families, maybe not to that from the outside, but like inside, like how do you know if you're doing it right or doing it the best you can?
Okay. That very good question. I think when there's, you know, I think when there's a process, like if yesterday it was a disaster six times and today we're at five, where we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So understand first, it is going to be challenging, but it's also the reason we hurt and things are challenging is because we love the way we do. Mm-hmm. So when there's the storm, but then, hey, we're transitioning into a new season and a new normal, and we have to learn that all over again. Mm-hmm. That's when you know. As long as you're having those hard conversations in a loving way, people aren't feeling cut off. Your family's the most important thing. You're doing it right. You're doing it right. Right doesn't mean it's not going to be chaotic sometimes.
Or hard.
Very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. The gradual, you know, it's a process, right? So as long as you're progressing, you know.
Yes.
You're doing it.
As we wrap up today, I think what we've heard is that no family's reintegration is going to look the same, that we shouldn't be surprised if there are bumps along the way, and that it can be stressful. And we have to keep in mind that while our service member has been away, we've grown and we've changed. Our service member has also grown and changed. And it takes all of that coming back together and keeping that in mind to help and to foster the reintegration process. And that it's important for our family members to keep in mind and service members that if they're struggling and they can't seem to get past some of these struggles involved with reintegration, that there are resources available.
Thank you so much for being here, Jennifer. This was wonderful, and we appreciate your insight. And our listeners can reach out to Jennifer through the Behavioral Health Office for the South Carolina National Guard and the whole team of behavioral health specialists that are there. But I know y'all also work with other resources like the chaplains and family programs and things like that. So lots of different options for families.
Absolutely. And I'll give my direct number. It's 394-2076. We also have a behavioral health line 24 hours. That's 866-345-8400. I mentioned the chaplains and the team, that many times when there's a mental health issue, it's not on an island by itself. It involves, so we work very closely together to make sure that that service member and that family has a combination of services. And yes, the Spartanburg, every day we have a group text. We're communicating within the confines of confidentiality, of course. And with the chaplains, the same thing. We are working closely together, behavioral health and chaplains.
That's wonderful to have a whole system of support. So thank you again for your time today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, we would love it if you would hit the follow button on whatever platform you listen to your content on. And better yet, please share it with another military family. We'd like to help as many people as we can. And don't forget to join us next time on our podcast. Thank you for joining us at Family Guidons, from the Bluff Road Readiness Center in Columbia, South Carolina, to wherever you may be. Until next time.